finally, I found the producer who got it. And that's the producer that I ended up originally signing with long before the current option with the studio. That producer was Robert Chartoff. Ted Ravenette, a friend of his who was a play producer and a film producer, had found Ender's Game, brought it to Chartoff, and Chartoff read it, loved it, and they got it. They knew that Ender had to be played under 12, and they understood why. And they were going to fight for that. And Robert Chartoff's producing partner, Lynn Hendy, who is a marvelous producer and a joy to work with, and became the active producer on this, the one that I worked most closely with. She got it, and they agreed that I would write the screenplay. And in order to sell the project, I wrote screenplays for which I was not paid. Officially, I'm not supposed to do that, but I wasn't union labor, and I was adapting my own books. So, I sort of fit in through the cracks. I wrote one draft, and it was a good draft, but the heart wasn't there, and we didn't understand why. No, none of us were understanding what wasn't working. It wasn't what I left out. It wasn't that I was too faithful to the original book. In fact, I sometimes appalled them by how unfaithful I was, but I knew what the essence of the story was, and so I was able to strip away a lot of things that really weren't necessary. But somehow the emotions just weren't coming through. People would read the book and be thrilled, and then they'd read the screenplay, and they'd go, it's just not there. And they couldn't say why. I tried again. My second full draft from ground zero with a completely different approach. And once again, it was better, it was closer, but it wasn't there. It wasn't until on a completely related project, and I'll probably talk about it more on the audiobook version of that book, a book called Ender's Shadow, which was something, believe me, I never planned to write. But for various reasons, I found myself writing a novel that was exactly parallel to Ender's Game, only it focused on the character of Bean. It saw all of the same events through Bean's eyes. And as soon as that book existed, though I didn't see it at first, the key to Ender's Game the movie had now been found. It took the interest of Richard LeGravenez in working on Ender's Game. He thought that the book was terrific. He wanted to be involved. He's a great screenwriter. But it was his wife, Anne, who first said, no, you don't adapt Ender's Game. You adapt Ender's Game and Ender's Shadow. And she was dead on. As soon as I heard that from her, I realized that she had found that key. My novel, Ender's Shadow, was the way to make Ender's Game, not by filming Ender's Shadow, because that's not Ender's story, that's Bean's story, but by focusing on the relationship between Ender and Bean, we solved the fundamental movie-making problem with Ender's Game. And here's what the problem was. Ender's Game takes place inside Ender's head. The only way you understand the horrible moral dilemmas that he's facing, the only reason you care deeply about him, the only reason that you're so emotionally involved is that you're inside his head throughout the entire novel. And movies can't do that. Movies can't tell you what the character is thinking. I mean, they can. They can give you voiceovers, for example. So Ender's walking along a corridor in battle school, and suddenly you hear his voice. He's not speaking, but you know you're getting his thoughts. And he says, I wonder what Peter's doing right now. What a dreadful way to handle Ender's thoughts. It wouldn't work. Or you have the character talk about his thoughts and feelings, which is the standard thing you do in movies. But with Ender's Game, Ender is a quiet guy. He doesn't reveal his feelings. If he does, he's not Ender. So there's no way to tell you what he's feeling. But as soon as you bring Bean into the story as an equal or nearly equal character, now you have what Hollywood is good at, a buddy movie. You have two characters who are at first antagonistic, then later become allies in a struggle against adults. The adults are trying to decide which of them is going to be the commander that they need in order to save the world, so that even when they're cooperating, the adults are still seeing a competition between them. And right up to the last minute, it's there in Ender's Game, it's explicit in Ender's Shadow, we don't know which of them is going to be in command at the final battle. Now that's the story Hollywood could tell. And not only that, we could tell it more briefly. My first script that included both Ender's Game and Ender's Shadow was 20 pages shorter than any script I had ever written from Ender's Game alone. It was doable. And my script proved that it could be done because that script had the emotional impact. Now, you know, no studio can ever justify spending $120 million to make a movie based on a script written by the author who has never had a movie made before. So they have other writers coming in, and I'm sure that the draft I wrote is not even going to be close to what the final draft is. Nevertheless, I proved that the emotional impact could be there and that the problems could be solved. And I was happy. I'm perfectly willing to let them go ahead. Well, based on that take on the adaptation,